Welcome to PharmaTalk Radio. I'm Valerie Bowling. PharmaTalk Radio is a nonprofit program to disseminate helpful information to those in life sciences, and in particular, drug development and drug delivery. This podcast is a recording from the concluding presentation at the inaugural Drug Delivery West Conference on lessons learned with drug delivery pioneer and risk taker Dr. John Patton, CEO and chairman of Dance Biopharma. A big thanks to Dr. Patton and to Dr. Ann Daugherty, who's the senior manager drug delivery at Genentech, who conducts the fireside with Dr. Patton. Enjoy the podcast.
I don't know how many of you are already familiar with John, but I thought I'd give a little bit of background on John. So what I was impressed by when I went to LinkedIn, even though I've known John for about 33 years now, just to find out all the things about him. I knew some things. I thought I knew everything about John in terms of his education and all that, but you have a bachelor's degree in zoology like I do. You went on to get a PhD in molecular biology, and pardon me, in marine biology, not molecular biology like most people that I work with. And then you went on to do a postdoc at Lund in Sweden, and then on to Harvard Medical School. So after that, you went to the University of Georgia, and you were working in GI physiology, is that correct?
In fish.
In fish. Oh, okay, so that's the marine biology thing. Okay, so you got tenure after 5 years, I believe, and then somebody called you from Genentech, because I know at the time we were interested in doing oral delivery of growth hormone, and I was at the time was working on the respiratory track for delivery of growth hormone. And so that was your entree into Genentech. You get tenure in, amazingly, 5 years. Most people take longer. And four years, it looked like, on LinkedIn. And there you are. You go ahead and jump ship to Genentech. And Genentech, then you become enamored with pulmonary delivery. So it was a new field for you. And then Roche started its first acquisition in 1989. And we got a couple more coins in our purses, and you then decided to follow your dream, and you left Genentech to start Inhale. Did you start out first with the name Inhale?
Yes.
Yeah. I think you and I had talked about this, and I...
Yeah. I wanted it to be understandable, because so many company names, you don't know what they do. I wanted it to be a verb, and Bill Clinton was not inhaling at that time, so... I wanted to know, everybody to know that we did inhale.
We did inhale. Okay, you did inhale. But then I guess the name got to be a little bit of a misnomer, so to speak, when you acquired Shearwater. And that was a good strategic play, because Shearwater, as many people in the room probably know, makes pegs. So yep. Very astute there. And what I was noting before, John is a serious bird watcher, so the name Shearwater was particularly attractive as well. So, but that's not the reason why you acquired the company. But you then changed your name to Nectar.
Right.
What was behind that name?
Well, first of all, it's supposed to be nectar, like in the flower. And because we wanted our stock ticker to... We needed an A in the word, and everybody pronounced it Nectar. My father was furious. He was like, "This is like tar around your neck."
Oh, my gosh.
And I've written a little book about nectar, how each flower formulates their nectar to attract different species. It was just blown out of the water. It's now known as Nectar.
Yes.
Another one of my screw-ups.
I was worried there for a moment that I was mispronouncing it. Like, there's Genentech versus Genentech.
Yeah. Yeah.
I come from a mixed marriage. My husband says Genentech. I have always said Genentech. So, it's been that way. Go figure. Anyway, so then you were involved with Incarta, and say a little bit about Incarta before I go on.
So Incarta is funded by Morningside, Sophie Novo, and some other good groups. We always wanted to work on inhaled medicines for acute cardiac, like heart attacks, atrial fibrillation. And this was something we never got to at Nectar. And that company just, I think, raised $40 million last month. And it was hell getting it going. But now it's taking off. There's all kinds of corporate partners waiting in the wings. But it's a natural. you know, why would you inhale something? Well, you want to inhale something primarily to treat lung disease because it's topical delivery. You spare the rest of the body toxicity. For example, I have a son who had severe asthma, and I didn't know anything about, I was still a marine biologist. I didn't know anything about steroids, and he was taking oral steroids for his asthma. He's an adult at 5'5". It's stunted his growth. Mm. That's just one of the side effects that you get from taking an oral medication for a pulmonary disease. So nobody, it's very easy to get the scientific logic of inhaling something to treat the lungs. It's just one more step because the lung and the heart, they are just an oxygenating, you know, gas exchange machine. So when you inhale something, especially small molecules, they go straight to the left atrium, the right to the heart. So it's targeted delivery also. So that was the rationale behind that. It was so hard to get people to bite on that. Finally, J.P. Morgan, we were talking to the Morningside guys, and I said, listen, you guys invest in this. You're going to make history. You know, venture usually likes to follow a trend. Nobody is inhaling drugs for cardiac. And Morningside went for it, and I think it's going to bear fruit.
Okay.
So did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did. Okay. In fact, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. So then you started dance.
Right. So. Well, after the Exubra fiasco, I could not let it go. Exubra didn't fail because patients didn't like it. You know, they called it the tennis can, the bong. Internet had a field day.
No one in this room knows about that, bongs, okay?
No, I know. They read about it, though. By now, they've read about it. It's an idea. It's like electric cars. It's going to come. It's just, mm-hmm. You know, it was a commercial failure. They thought it would sell itself. Every time you tell somebody naive about inhaled insulin versus injection, they just fall in love with it. It's so obvious. And it was so obvious that Pfizer didn't raise a finger to get ready for it. They thought it would sell itself. Mankind always thought they would have a partner. Al Mann was telling Wall Street in 2007 that he would have a partner in 2 months. They never plowed the field. They never took the stones out. They never put the fertilizer in or the sprinkler system. There was nothing there but a stillborn product. You have to prepare the market for these kind of products.
Absolutely. And we were going to get into that a whole lot more. So I first wanted to finish up with you with regard to just your background.
Oh, sorry.
And that's okay, John. In terms of as Yuri showed this morning, jumping off the cliff and starting inhale, you've always taken risks. I think that's the point that we thought about when we thought about having you be part of this program, is that you're a real risk taker and you are not afraid of putting yourself out there and jumping off from something that you have to secure. You had the tenured position at University of Georgia and then a good position at Genentech working with me. And then you leave to start these things. So what was behind starting Inhale? What was the inception there? Why did you do it? Why did you take the risk?
Okay, so I don't know. If you've ever been in the jungle, you'll find these trees where a jaguar has just clawed the tree and left these huge scratches, and you're like, holy cow, this guy must be around here. I always wanted to win the Nobel Prize. I always wanted to do something cool. And I always wanted to do something with a big impact. So this wasn't risk for me. It was like following. If you want to talk to me about something I'm afraid of, I don't like confrontation. If you're going to start giving me a hard time and making my life miserable, I don't sleep at night. I have problems with confrontation. I hate confrontation. Starting a company or something like that, that's fun. That's fun for me. And I'm not worried about money, because money comes, I think, when you're you know, working hard and pursuing your passion and listening to smart people around you. So I don't think of it as risk. It's fun.
Yeah, okay. Well,
there's a lot of things I'm afraid of, but not this, not doing these kinds of things.
Yeah, and I think most people couldn't be that brave. I mean, that's really outstanding. But you've stayed the course with pulmonary delivery for the past about 30 years now.
Yep.
So
32.
Okay, and who's counting? Why that dedication? Have you ever considered other routes of administration for drug delivery? And what's the sweet spot for pulmonary? What would you say is in and what's outside of what would be good for pulmonary delivery? It would work well for pulmonary delivery.
Well, you know, as I said, treating lung disease is a very sound scientific, logic. And after heart disease and stroke, lung infections are the third largest killer on the planet. You know, we can stop these with inhaled antibiotics and inhaled antifungals and antivirals.
Why aren't there more of them then?
Well, yeah, why not? They're coming. There's a lot of companies working on...
What took so long?
Pardon me?
What's taking so long?
Antibiotics are given... The clinical trials are not designed correctly. The antibiotics are given by IV, and then you have to show efficacy on top of that with your pulmonary. The IV, it's hard to see the endpoints. There's been some classic failures now. With inhaled antibiotics, but they're coming and they're real and they're going to be efficacious. I would not inhale a monoclonal antibody for systemic effect unless you have some special mechanism for getting absorbed, because mAbs are too big to be absorbed from the lungs significantly. They're metabolized and they stay in the lungs for many hours.
I would not inhale things that are absorbed too fast for pulmonary delivery. You want things to stay there, unless it's nicotine or something like that, where it goes through like a shot.
Mm-hmm. So,
All deliveries. I mean, I love oral delivery. I love every kind of delivery there is out there, as long as it's biologically appropriate. I think trying to put proteins through your skin is ridiculous. You have to make all kinds of fancy devices, electricity, and tons of needles. And, you know, as Dick Jones, my mentor, said, there's already a great transdermal delivery system. It's a syringe.
Okay. So you brought a really, truly novel product to the market, but the market didn't really seem to be ready. And you touched on it a little bit already, but did you need to manage expectations for that product? How could it have unfolded differently if you had to do a postmortem?
Well, the real problem with Exubra was there was a change of management at Pfizer. Pfizer had become bloated. They were wasting money all over the world. They hired this new CEO, Jeff Kindler, to clean house. He laid off 12,000 people, shut down R&D centers all over the world. And he took a look at his job was to tighten the belt and cut. He looked at the sales ramp for Exubra, which was $20 million in the first year, the same sales ramp for Lantus, the third largest selling, this is a long-acting injected insulin. The ramp was identical to that to Lantus injectable adoption, and he made a calculation of what it was in the first year and looked at how much money was invested in Exubra, which was about $2.8 billion. He looked at the tax write-off, which was about 50%. So Pfizer made $1.4 billion by canning that project. They should have hung in. I mean, we did have a big device, but our second generation device was about 2.5 inches long. It worked beautifully. We took out some of the excipients. It was just a very unfortunate situation, and they didn't prepare the world and market for it, as I said before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So in having gone through this experience, are you applying some of those learnings now? And what could you impart in terms of learning if anybody else wanted to do anything similar, or people that are in some of the more nascent companies? What type of learnings could you provide?
Well, so just on that particular learning, there was no commercial preparation. So Merck developed a diabetes drug a few years ago. It's called Januvia. It's an oral medication. It's not very efficacious, but it's not very toxic. They spent 4 years getting the market ready, getting the key opinion leaders, getting the diabetes, well, in this, our case, would be diabetes educators, getting everybody set, talking to the payers, just making everything ready. It's the best-selling drug in the history of Merck. None of that was done. And I think, you know, so I just completely changed our board. I brought on three commercial people. We're getting ready to raise money again. We're going out with, I'm hoping, the best commercial plan we can, because nobody doubts that inhaled insulin works. Nobody doubts that people don't like injections. Nobody doubts that it's a huge market. They all go, well, Pfizer failed, Sanofi failed, MannKind is struggling. Who are you? What do you guys know? So we have to have a very strong commercial. And the commercial people we have, they've had recent exits of their own companies for over $1 billion. We're going to hit the investors in Wall Street with the strongest commercial. Our deck is probably only going to have about 6 slides on our commercial plan. But, you know, we have to have it because that's the only piece that's missing. And it's not a mystery. If you look at it, why did these drug delivery inhaled insulin projects fail? It's completely obvious. And I'm not a commercial guy, and you know we don't have commercial people on our team. Now we're bringing them in. I'm hoping tonight to make an offer for a new CEO, another good commercial investment finance guy. I'm hoping just what we need.
All right. And one of the things when you and I talked, you said you really need to know yourself and know what your strengths are and know what type of role you can take in the company. Would you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah. So what's the saying go? No, ride the horse you came in on. So I'm a scientist. I love science. And I think I'm pretty good at it. I'm okay at it. I'm not a businessman. And I've tried to be a businessman. And it's not my DNA. I'm probably just mediocre at it, and it's stressful for me. I really think that. So at Genentech, we had the Myers-Briggs. Everybody knows about Myers-Briggs personality profile. I was frustrated because I'm sort of a broad brushstroke kind of guy, and then there were all these detail colleagues of mine who just. They just shredded me with their detailed logic and their way of thinking. And I thought something was wrong with them. And they thought something was wrong with me. And after I got done with Myers-Briggs, I realized, holy cow, I'm okay. They're okay. And since then, I read this great book, The Wisdom of the Crowd. It's one of the most famous business books. And they talk about the space shuttle and why that went down and all kinds of, you know, why are bad decisions made? And, you know, the take home is that five or six, seven independent people always come up with a better solution than an expert. Always. They always come up with a better, way to go than the boss. So I'm really a fan of the team. Obviously, you got to have the team and having the, you know, independent thinking on the team. No such thing as a dumb question. You've got to bring it all in. Everybody synthesize it. And then... You have a chance of making the best decision.
Yeah. So, what about one of the ideas that you said early on was when you were first trying out some formulations, you wanted to see how they felt. And one of the things you said to me last night was, you know, you just need to know a couple of things when you're going to go into dosage forms: bioavailability, dose, water solubility, PK, and what does it feel like? So.
Yeah.
Speak to that point there, because you have a perspective I'm not sure is shared by the FDA, but go ahead.
Well, so you and I worked on nasal growth hormone at Genentech, and I didn't like the idea because you had to use penetration enhancers, and penetration enhancers, they give you great bioavailability, but they break down your mucosa, and you start to get abnormal cell growth over time. So they give you great results in the beginning, and then they bite you in the ass downstream after you've spent a lot of money. So I was trying to figure out how to kill the program, and I just formulated a bunch of nasal, and we had our enhancer in there. I think it was a bile salt or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the VPs and Dave Martin, they were all there, and I passed it around. I said, here, squirt it up your nose. And they're like, whoa, what the heck was that? Killed the project right there.
But so, no people, by the way. However.
However,
your next story about your CEO.
Oh, my God. So so we had this wonderful CEO for inhale.
You don't really mean to use the past tense, do you?
No, he's still alive.
Okay. All right.
But he's way alive. But we hired him out of the White House. He's a White House fellow, and he was suggested to us by Terry Opendyke at Onset Ventures. And there we are in Washington and putting the acetates out in the hotel bedroom. And he goes, I'm in. So it's, what? You're leaving the White House to come work for us? That's great. So he came, and the VCs said, well, we know that insulin, you showed us this paper from Germany back in 1925 that insulin's absorbed. Show us another molecule. So I said, okay, we'll do calcitonin. So we got calcitonin, and we were up, and this was on University Avenue in Palo Alto, up in the second story of this bank. And my cousin is a nurse, so she came in and put in catheters, and we were inhaling calcitonin and drawing blood. And Rob is he's like a fantastic athlete, but he's super thin. He has to wear really thin clothes. And my cousin Sharon could not get the catheter into his arm, and she kept poking and poking. And Bob and I are getting our blood drawn and putting the blood in the rack, and we're still trying to get blood from Rob. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at him, and he just keels over, and I caught him just before he hit the floor. And then the VC comes in. Rob is completely unconscious with his feet up on the table, or up on the chair, lying on the floor. And I'm like, oh, geez. And I mean, he recovered. It was a vasovagal thing that happens with injections. But the next day, Lily was in there. We were pitching Lily, and Rob, who's extremely articulate, couldn't really talk. He was boo. And I was really afraid that we'd done serious damage, but he pulled through. Now, that's a CEO that's ready to join.
Definitely a risk taker.
But another example was we were developing inhaled a nicotine. Clean nicotine, no carcinogens, which I believe in. A lot of people, they wouldn't work at a company that worked on nicotine, clean nicotine. So we had a beautiful aerosol, had a beautiful, simple formulation, minimal excipients. And I said, okay, we got to try it. And they said, well, you try it, John. So I tried it. And I didn't know there were pain receptors in your lungs, but this was the worst formulation you could possibly imagine. And we'd already penciled out the tox studies that we were going to do. And it took me 2 weeks to recover from this inhalation of this horrible nicotine formulation that burned the heck out of. That's why there's no insects that eat tobacco. One bite, and that insect is dead. So we killed it, and we killed it early. And medicine is historic that people try things. How about that guy who put the catheter in his arm in front of the X-ray machine and stuck the catheter up into his heart? There's so many stories like that. But in our drug business, which is so expensive, you can cut out so much work by just giving it a try.
Did we bill him right as a pioneer and risk taker? Yes.
Well, the other thing is you got to get just buy a bottle of the chemical, put your finger in there and taste it. Mm-hmm. You can just titrate. You don't have to take a lot, just a little bit, and you know you got problems with some molecules. Maybe it's okay, but you want to know, and don't spend a lot of money. We are very sensitive biological creatures.
Okay.
Sometimes.
All right. Okay. So I do want to leave a little bit of time for the audience to be able to ask you some questions, but I want to know if there's anything else you'd like to say before I open it up.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I'm not sure. I can...
Well, okay. Anything you'd want to say about what you see, just a little bit of a future-oriented... view, anything you see coming along for the future, what do you predict? And then let's open it up for the audience to ask some questions.
Well, I do think this digital connectivity revolution is awesome. And it looks really confusing, but it's really starting to shake out. And, I just heard from one of my physician friends that 40% of doctors want to quit. They hate their profession so much. They are inundated with data. They're inundated with forms and insurance companies, and everything about their lives is just a mess. And some of them just are, anyway. This physician that I'm talking to is a cardiologist, and he started a company. And, you know, there's little monitors you can put on people now, and you can monitor people's heart rate, and Fitbit does sleep. All kinds of things are being monitored. And what he's doing is using artificial intelligence to take, let's say you're a cardiologist, you have 300 subjects. He's taking this digital data, they're processing it, you know, in the cloud, wherever that is, and he's getting a readout on the screen of all his patients. So there's these, you know, gently pulsing green lights with little numbers. You can click on those. That's his patients who are doing fine. Then there's some yellow lights, people whose numbers are a little bit higher. His whole practice is on his screen. And then up at the top, there's five or six flashing red lights. These are people whose heart rate might be 220 beats per minute, and they don't know it, and they're at great risk. Here he can see this is making the doctor's life not simpler, but it's making him more effective and more cost effective and more time effective. And the doctor's going to feel great about this. And he can click on them, notify them right away. Hey, I got to talk to you. I'm going to order this for you. Go down and get it, and so forth. So, you know, the last few years, everything we heard was doctors saying that they don't want data. They don't want all this data coming individually. But if somebody else is going to process it for them, then it's going to be really transformative. So I really think, you know, that's one example that I see. And so I'm excited about that.
Okay. All right. Good. So questions. Chris.
Yeah, hey John, thank you for those stories. Just a question for partnering. So when you partnered with Pfizer or they decided to acquire you, can you describe what kinds of other companies you were talking to? Were you actually looking for an acquisition? How did that process go? How did you evaluate the partners you were talking to?
Well, so all of the insulin makers turned us down. And we were talking to Pfizer at the same time, but, you know, the mafia, Lilly, Novo, and Sanofi, or the oligopoly, as we call them, they all said no.
They all said no, but they all had their own programs too, right, or that they were evaluating.
Yeah. Well, as soon as Pfizer started a program, they went and brought their own programs up and brought them deep into phase three. As soon as Pfizer pulled the plug, they jumped out right away because they were doubling down on pen technology, making them smaller, you know, more cost effective and so forth. But at that time, we had so many other projects going at Inhale that, you know, we started out as licensing the program. We weren't looking for an acquisition, and we never were looking for acquisitions, oddly enough. But as you know, the normal course of events is you get a project going, and then the acquisition comes along with time. But, well, there's so much to say about that question.
Okay. Somebody else who'd like to ask something with John? What else might you say, John, just before? I think we do have another question, but something else that we talked about that you think would be good for everyone to hear.
I'm looking at some of this stuff.
I didn't ask you about venture money, but...
VCs?
Yeah, would you like to talk about that?
The time that Tom Perkins almost beat me to death with his cane. I have a love-hate relationship with venture capital. And I have to say, venture capital was with Inhale, very successful company. Venture capital with Incarta, it's really doing great. Dance, we didn't do venture. Mm-hmm. And in retrospect, I think it was a mistake. What's great about venture capital is they bring their friends. And they can write pretty big checks. Dance has been funded. I think we've raised about $65 million. It's all high net worth people, friends, and family. So we have 560 investors. Some have invested 10,000, some of them invested 200,000. Hardly anybody's invested over a million, except for our Molex, who just put in 7 million. But that's a whole nother subject about venture capitalists, but they're only about 1% of the money that's out there. There's so much money that's out there that's not venture capital, but they are very experienced and they're cutthroat. And like this guy sitting here, I don't know if he's still here. There you are. He was asked to value, what would be your value on drug delivery and be lower. And if I offer you 12 and you don't take it and you go shop and then you come back, you're going to get 8. I mean, that's very typical. And I totally understand it. This is business. This is freaking business. And it's tough. This is why I don't consider myself a good CEO. But because, CEOs, I was reading this thing about psychopaths in the New Yorker, and they said that, there's a bunch of serial killers that are psychopaths, they're in prison or on the loose, but they're not psychopaths, they're mostly not in jail. They're out there in the land, and there's one walk of life that's very attractive to psychopaths, and that's being CEOs, because investors don't care if you're that kind of mentality, because you're going to make money for them. You're going to make money for yourself, and you're going to make money for them. So people are blind. So our business attracts, and I think VCs sometimes have that same mentality. And, not always, but the population's enriched. And I feel like, you need to be wary of these types of personalities. If you can, ride their coattails and you're two office levels below them, they may sweep you into great riches. But if you have to deal with them, it can be really hard.
Oh, okay, good. Sorry. I think we have one more question.
Sure. Being a risk taker, when did you decide to try the drug that you were working on? Right after filing an IND and getting approval, or
when did we decide to do what?
You personally, when did you try the compound that you were working on?
Oh, way before an IND.
All right.
Yeah, way before an IND. No, there's really, you need to look at the pharmacokinetics. You need to do that experiment, and that's what we did. The other experiment we did. You have to see how fast is it absorbed and what's its bioavailability. And forget about devices and the formulation has to be isotonic. People are always putting formulations that aren't biologically correct, so they burn or they explode the cells because there's not enough salt. You have to get the formulation right, but you really need to do that bioavailability experiment, do it in a rat, do it. It only costs a few thousand dollars, like $10,000. Find out what the absorption is and the bioavailability. And then everything flows from that. Devices, which route of delivery, formulation. Do it really, really at the very beginning. Feasibility study.
All right. Well, technically we're out of time, but Chris, special dispensation.
What's kind of the next wave in drug delivery technologies, setting aside digital and mobile and all that stuff?
Well, drug delivery, I keep getting drawn to oncology, where all cancers are becoming more and more orphan and more genetically specific. But they could use the same drug delivery system. So I think that's just huge, the way that we're going to match therapies to our genome. But in drug delivery, this is going on now. I mean, pegylation has been really successful. Sure. I think molecule engineering to engineer kinetics is far better than particle engineering. We spent years on liposomes and PLGA particles and metal precipitates, expensive manufacturing processes, heavy burden with excipients, putting an innocuous linker on it, and then maybe having a targeting arm on it, like Serena's doing down there in Huntsville. That's got to grow. That's really got to grow. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I would agree. Engineering, there's a lot of stuff going on in nanoparticle and targeted delivery, which I 100% agree.
Gene delivery, obviously, that's a whole different category, and there the viral structure is probably exactly what you want. Yeah. The reduced viral structure.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, John.
Thank you. And I have a reputation to maintain because, as one person pointed out, I'm very strict on time, and I've been a little bit lenient here. So, you're keeping your reputation as a risk taker. There's no doubt about it. So thank you so much, John, for your words. Okay, so Jim, do you want to join me up on the stage? We're going to say a couple of things, and then we're going to be followed by Kate, and we'll close out the meeting. So first, of course, we want to thank all of the speakers today for all of the talks that were just fascinating. I was so impressed. I was excited about this meeting before I came to it, and now I'm even more excited about this particular meeting on the West Coast, and I want to see this be an annual event, so I'm trying to convince Valerie and everybody from the conference forum that we totally want to have this. So I know Kate's going to say something about the eval, so please give your honest evaluation about how well this program worked and any suggestions. And so we'd really like to hear from you.
Yeah, no, we'll echo that. Thank you to all the speakers. Great 2 days of talks, really inspiring way to finish, I think, with this last discussion today. And so, thank you as well to all of you for your engagement, for, your questions, good discussions. And thanks to the sponsors for making this event possible.
Yes.
And lastly, thanks to Valerie and Kate and Michelle and Meredith for the great organization and bringing this all together. So it's been a great 2 days. Thank you.
And a quick round of applause for Anne and Jim here, who did a phenomenal job leading the past 2 days in discussion for drug delivery. I also want to thank, again, our sponsors, our launch sponsors, our executive sponsors for joining us, and more importantly as well, our patients who have joined us to provide their input. So, Cynthia, I think you're the last one left. So a round of applause for Cynthia. Some closing notes here. Evaluations, please fill them out and drop them out on the registration desk on your way out. We also have an electronic version, so if you missed that, that'll be passed around as well through email this week. All of the presentations that have been approved for posting will be available within the week. The passcode is in your brochure, but that'll also be included in the email. And lastly, our POD program is taking place in October, similar to this, but on the East Coast in Boston. I think it's a little bit bigger. Valerie can attest to that, with multiple tracks on different types of technologies as well. But definitely a phenomenal event for the first time here on the West Coast. We're excited about bringing it back in 2019 and certainly want your feedback on what you liked, what you didn't like, and suggestions on who we should be including next time around. So with that said, thank you all for joining us, and we hope to see you next year. Safe travels.
Drug Delivery West is produced by the Conference Forum. The next drug delivery event is the 8th Annual Pod Conference happening October 17th through the 19th in Boston. To get on our mailing list for future drug delivery podcasts, email us at service@tcfllc.org. And for more information about our drug delivery conferences, visit us at theconferenceforum.org. Thanks for listening.